You don't want to see Leonardo DiCaprio fighting a ghost.
No.
Because you know it's Leonardo DiCaprio. You want to see someone who could be you, someone you've never seen before, just completely unheard of act. And I think that makes it a better film of horror films.
Hello, you, and welcome back to List Envy. This is the podcast in which I collaborate with a guest to build a top five list on a topic they choose. This week, my guest is stand-up comic Luke Gallagher. Now, when we started our conversation, Luke was at the beginning of his comedy journey, and in just, like, I don't know, 6 weeks, the man has gone from strength to strength. So it is it's quite the thing to see. This man be gigging. So go look him up. Definitely seek him out. And of course, information is in the show notes. So this week we are talking films that give us the absolute ick. So not necessarily horror films, but films that are perhaps a little spooky, a little scary, to round out our sort of double feature of things that are spooky and scary, and just to keep within the vibe, I've now got myself a spooky cold, so that's fun. Listen, you and I will have a chat later, but for now we've got an important job to do. I want to find out from Luke why it is that traditionally horror films are so underrated by critics.
Maybe people are looking for something different in horror films, where they're looking for something absolutely amazing with amazing backstory and everything to get that 9 or those 8s. But I think for me, if it's just a solid story, scares you, I'd be giving that an 8 or a 9. So I don't know why.
Yeah. Like, are horror films your favourite genre?
In terms of favourite genre of film, it's different because I like a mystery, a psychological thriller, something I'm going to sit and get stuck into as a really good film.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and maybe this comes back to with ratings thing and all that and horrors being lower, but I think with horror, I'm not sitting down because I want a really good film. I'm sitting down because I want...
You want to feel something. Visceral...
Yeah, exactly. I want to feel scared. If I compare myself to my fiancée, she hates horror films, right? But she will stand on the wing of a plane and do wing walking.
Right.
And love roller coasters and love all that. I don't have that. I hate roller coasters.
Oh, really?
I don't even particularly like flying. I don't... Okay.
You don't want to be physically in peril.
Yeah, I'm not an adrenaline junkie, yep. But my adrenaline is sitting down in a dark room, watching a horror film.
Completely safe.
But feeling completely scared. I'm feeling to the point where I don't even want to go to the toilet because I don't want to leave this room because there's something outside the door. So my number one for the film that gives me the creeps, actually, if I watched it today, probably wouldn't be there, but it's something that I watched as a child. So sometimes nostalgia there. But it's a film that, to this day, I still have nightmares about this film. I still have nightmares about this character. Even though this character is not a ghost, it's a human character, it's not a human character. But so the film is Nightmare on Elm Street.
Okay.
The original, 1980, yep. I think it's 1984, Nightmare on Elm Street. Freddy Krueger, the all-time scariest thing, whatever he is, in a film. So I watched it the first time when I was a kid, and my brother's a bit older than me, and they had it, I think, on recorded copy or...
Yeah, some pirated VHS or something.
Yeah, pirated VHS, you get back in the day. And I wasn't allowed to watch it because I was young. I was like sort of, I don't know, 7, 8 years old. And I remember once, the first time I watched it, my mum was out, and my brothers were like, let's watch Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm allowed to watch it. And it's weird, it's one of my few memories from being really young.
Mm-hmm.
My mum getting home and I was crying, because I was so scared. And brothers really got in trouble.
Yeah.
But then I was obsessed with this film and I just wanted to watch it all the time. And it scared me so much, but I always wanted to watch it. And I think the last time I watched it was probably only watched it a couple of times as an adult, maybe 18, 19 might have been the last time I watched it. So talking 15 plus years ago. And if I watched it today, I kind of don't want to watch it again now because it would take away...
Yeah.
That memory of it, and it probably isn't as good as I remember.
Yeah.
But as a kid, it the whole idea of Freddy Krueger and the fact that you can't escape him because you fall asleep and he's there. Like I say, to this day, probably once a year, I'll still have a nightmare where Freddy Krueger is trying to kill me.
Oh.
And that is a recurring nightmare I still have to this day. And that's how much that film has lived with me from a young age.
Oh, man.
And I think it's the greatest horror film ever made. There's so much about it that... It's just creepy. And that's the difference between that and, like I say, a horror film where it's like a Saw or some of these great horror films where, or Midsommar, these great horror films that are technically brilliant, but don't give you that same feeling of completely creeped out and you're scared to even leave a room.
Wow, that is, I feel like it's an unexpected choice, but a very good one. Like, I can't fault it. I can't fault it. Well, I'll just say, I mean, this was my number one, was Midsommar. Or Midsommar. Yeah. I think it was, it's uncomfortable and it's psychological, like there's no supernatural element. It's all not plausible, but like, you know, it's within the, you know, whatever. And it was just from, there's a moment where things turn, because there's a moment in the film where I'm sort of going, it's supposed to be great, there's loads of things and nothing's really happened. There's this bunch of people in Sweden. I've already seen someone I recognize that's taken me out of the film. The guy from the Good Place. I'm like, he's in this horror film. Okay. And is something going to happen? Then suddenly, you know, there's kind of a ceremony and then a thing happens. And then from there, it's just like, bam, like the whole film kind of decides what it is, you know? And yeah, there's just, I mean, I'm not going to describe things cause it's unpleasant, but like, there's just, it's psychologically, it's kind of messy and just, uncomfortable and stayed with me more on that psychological level than like, I'm afraid that it's going to get me in my nightmares. But I've definitely got plenty of those.
I agree with what you're saying. It's one of those where it creeps you out. I think the fact that it is all plausible, the fact that it all happens in the day or it's always light is a very creepy thing as well, because I think in normal horror films you get it's scary for scary, but it's happening, it's dark, it's in the middle of the night, and then you get that sort of respite where the daytime comes, you know, something bad's going to happen again when the evening comes, but it's light, they're sort of the scenes where they're sort of, you know, between the scary bits, and you know you've got that respite because it's light and that's when you feel relaxed. Midsommar, you don't feel relaxed at all.
No.
Because the whole thing is light. And I think that's a very subtle thing that's dropped in that film, which makes it very unsettling. And I think because of my other films weren't that same feeling of unsettlingness, I took it out.
Yeah.
There's a few films I was thinking that are putting in there which give me the creeps in that way, which originally I had in my list, which I took out purely because it didn't match my other films in the list. But Midsommar, I think it's one of the best horror films. Definitely one of the best horror films of the 21st century, without doubt.
Yeah, good shout. Okay, what's your number two?
So my number two, this is one of those where, again, if I watched it now, it might not be up there, I don't know. But when it came, it's not that long ago, it probably came out 10, 15 years ago, Paranormal Activity, the first one. I think that really, really creeped me out. Because that is the epitome of what scares me, in horror, or just in general. Ghosts, things that... I don't actually believe in ghosts, weirdly enough, but I have a big fear of ghosts.
Yeah.
Strange, but my fiance, I have to tell her how much it scares me so she doesn't do it. So like, this one time she pretended to be possessed in bed because I would watch a horror film and it creeped me out. And then she did this thing where she, like, looked at me with these wide eyes and I was so creeped out.
Oh,
I couldn't deal with it. And that
someone's sleeping on the couch.
Yeah. Like, that is my... like, I can get carried away with my imagination. And I can even, like, get up to go for a wee in the middle of the night and walk in, I have to turn all the lights on.
Oh, yeah.
Because if I've watched a horror film that night, which really scared me, because it's like... Even around the corner, there could be a little girl ghost, or it's what my imagination is doing to me. Even when I wash my hands and I'm looking in the mirror, I'm like, I can't look in the mirror because there's someone still behind me. And that's when a horror film makes me feel that way. Like that will then last like the next 24 hours.
Yes, I know I've experienced a good one where I'm, it's late at night, I've gone for a wee, and I'm sort of humming to myself as I go back to bed, like, everything is normal, everything is good, and I'm not running into bed, I'm moving quickly.
Yeah, 100%. And it's films that really creep me out. So Paranormal Activity is the epitome of a film that makes me feel like that.
Yeah.
And it's done so well because it's so... I don't want to say believable because, like I said, I don't actually believe in ghosts, but it's done in such a believable way because it's the slow build up. And it's the fact that a lot of it's happening when they're asleep and the thing's recording. And because they're asleep, it makes it a bit even scarier for me. It's just...
And it starts so subtly.
Yeah.
And it has, still has such a big effect, even though all you're watching is a door just move a few inches.
Yeah.
But you're just like, uh-uh. Well, speaking of ghosts, my number two is the Australian 2014 The Babadook. This one got me. The one big negative it has is it has a library, like, you know, you get these sound libraries, and it's got like a beast noise that's obviously from a catalogue of beast noises, and it's such a, like, I recognised it from a video game that I used to play, and it's like, ah, no. But, you know, that aside, I just, yeah, it was creepy, but it's also one that's got a really interesting, like, it's, I like the ones that have got something to say.
Yeah.
And the Babadook is one that's got something to say about grief. And the idea, and there's a couple actually that are in my list that are to do with parenthood. And there's something that, some of these films play with is the bond between, like, the really solid bond between either father and son in the Babadook's case, or mother and son in case of some of the others that we might get to.
Yeah.
And how, like, even after death, that bond is so strong, and that need to protect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this thing will do everything it can, because it was the, you know, spoiler alert, the conceit is that this, you know, horrible sort of mostly invisible beast creature that comes to you at night if you're a kid is just a symbol for the parent, for the mother and the child's grief about the loss of their dad. Mm-hmm. And it's when they learn to tame that grief, then they learn to actually, like, they can almost befriend or look after the Babadook in the cellar, because it's like, we know what this is now. Yeah. And it makes sense. And even, like, the Babadook is an anagram of Dada Book. It's like, yeah, it's, you know, at the time, it's just, you know, there's just unsettling things, like the kids got, they're eating soup, and then there's suddenly glass in the soup, and the mum is just at the edge of her sanity, because she's dealing with this kid who she believes to just be kind of problematic and troubled, and there's just, like, she's doing her best, but she's really at the end of her tether, and that tension just keeps building as the film goes as well. So you've got the supernatural element, but you've also got this, like, this mum is kind of at the end of her rope kind of thing as well.
Yeah. My question to you, Mark, is are you going to try to do the Babadook sound? I think it's like Babadook. But a lot better than that. A lot creepier and better than that. I wouldn't have got the gig as doing a voice.
It's different when you've got a Midlands accent, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah. That'd be a version I quite like to watch, actually.
Yeah, yeah. What is your number three, please, sir?
My number three, from what you were just saying, might also be on your list. Hereditary.
Aha! It's, funnily enough, it's not. Tell me all about it, because I've... things, but please tell me all.
So Hereditary is another Ari Aster one, the guy that did Midsommar. And for me, it's just, I suppose this is a little bit different to the ones I've been talking about as well. It's one of those, but it creeped me out. Mm-hmm. gradually from the start. It was sort of, it's just the atmosphere of it. It wasn't so much that it scared me as much as made me want to leave the cinema and never watch another film again. So I sat in the cinema watching it, and it was the only time I've really sat there watching a film and thought, I actually feel physically uncomfortable here. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm really enjoying the film.
Yeah.
But I want it to stop. and that's how it made me feel at the beginning. And it built up and built up and built up. And then there's a scene in the end of the first part, which I won't give away what happens, but is horrendous. And the way it's shot from the beginning of that scene to what happens just puts you in a state of panic yourself, and then this thing happens and it's just horrendous and it just makes you feel horrible. I think the end of the film takes a little bit away from it for me. Mm. In terms of how I think it's a great film, it's one of the greatest horrors I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. I think the end, I was a bit disappointed with the ending, and I think that takes a little bit away from the film, but it doesn't change the fact that for 2 hours, however long I've watched that film, I've felt the way I have. And that's the category we're doing is films that scared us or, you know, made us feel
creeped out. Yeah.
And Hereditary just fits that bill perfectly because it's just so creepy. And it's just the way, it's every single scene of it is just dread, and like the music in the background, everything about it is just makes you feel a certain way all the way through, and it's not a pleasant viewing experience at all.
I don't know what happened, but I did not engage at all with Hereditary. I think I watched it wrong. I think I need to have a go and rewatch because I really enjoy the genre, and I usually find myself enjoying more than most people. You know what I mean? Like, I can always find something I enjoy, like, even on some of the sort of cheesier ones. But yeah, I remember just going, and I think I just wasn't engaging with it. Or maybe I had the wrong expectations. Like, I remember watching, you ever seen Sexy Beast?
No, I haven't actually, no.
Ray Winston and the guy who played Gandhi, and I've forgotten his name. It will come to me at some point. But it's essentially kind of a two-hander, and it's a kind of a gangster thing, because it's Ray Winston, you're expecting like, yeah, guns, you scumbag, and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, not really that at all. Mm-hmm. It's just really crackling tension between two people. And your man who plays Gandhi is just, he is electrifying. And, you know, you are used to seeing Ray Winston own like every scene and be the alpha, and he's absolutely not. But because I had different expectations as to what the film was going to be, the first time I watched it, I was like, this is rubbish. Then knowing what it is, it's like, oh, wow, because you're watching for the right things, you're paying attention for the right things, you're going, you're actually seeing the sort of fizzling, crackling tension and how it builds rather than waiting for a diamond heist or whatever. And I think that's maybe... I think I came into it thinking it was all going to be loads of boogans and scary things and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, it's not that. And I think I was more, my expectations were more set with Midsommar than with Hereditary. So I think I probably need to give it a rewatch, because I think it's probably due.
So I think for me, I think Midsommar and Hereditary, I see them as very similar.
Yeah.
And the only reason I think I've gone with Hereditary over Midsommar in this list is that Hereditary had more of a supernatural element to it. But in terms of the way they make you feel, I think are very similar for me.
Mm-hmm. My number three then is, takes us completely out of the genre, but I wanted to put it in because it completely creeped me out, and it's A Clockwork Orange.
Right.
1972. I, for whatever reason, I think I was at uni, so I was like, this is a film that you're supposed to watch and whatever. And I was doing media, so, you know, we watched all sorts like Do the Right Thing and Network and all these things. And Network is now one of my favourite films. But I downloaded it and I just watched it, and it's just horrid. And it's the way it's, I mean, the, you know, the music and the, it's the smiley violence. You know, you've got all the stuff like the being shown, you know, these corrective films, and the guy's got the, you know, tape over his eyelid, you know, taping his eyelids open and all that kind of stuff. But also just the guy, I mean, it's still little snatches of it that I remember having watched it over 20 years ago, of him like battering someone while he's singing in the rain. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it was the kind of glee to, you know, which he's showing, that was just, I just, yeah, 19 whatever year old me was just like, I didn't realize I was this soft, but like, this is this is unpleasant, and I don't like it. All right, let's get back to more fun things. What is your number four?
So you said there, when talking about Clockwork Orange, you used the term smiley violence. So number four for me, Smile.
I don't think I know this one.
Have you not? Okay. So smiley violence pretty much covers it.
Right, okay.
It's one that only came out last year.
Ah.
I think it's 2022, actually. And it's one of the only new horror films that, for me, would, you know, come close to this list, other than you sort of Ari Aster film there. But it's just, I watch a lot of horror films that have come out in the last sort of 5-6 years that all sort of follow the same formula, all very gimmicky, entertaining, I'd call them. But, and yeah, I like films like that because I call them just crap horrors. They're entertaining.
Schlock.
They're a good watch, but they're not good films and they don't really scare you.
Yeah. I think the most you get, and this is what they capitalize on a lot, is the jump scare.
Like, yes.
You know, there's nothing that's actually going to stay with you other than, you know, that.
Exactly. You get the odd jump scare, but it's not a good film and it's not really scary. And that's generally how the last sort of 5 to 10 years of horror films have been. And it's very hard to fight. Like, all the greats, I think, are much older than that.
Mm-hmm.
But Smile came out last year, the year before, and it was one of those horror films that does live with you.
Mm.
Very, very creepy. It's one of those you will go to bed thinking about as you're falling asleep.
Okay.
And we'll still be with you the next day.
I can't wait to watch this.
it just really creeped me out. But it creeped me out because it's that thing that it gives me that feeling. It's, I can't really compare it to anything else I've said because it's not like Paranormal Activity, but it gives me the same feeling as Paranormal Activity that it makes you
checking the exits and you're sort of you want to keep the lights on kind of thing.
Yeah, you get up halfway through the film to close the door because you don't like looking out into a dark hallway.
Oh,
it's that sort of that sort of feeling.
Yeah.
Essentially, somebody sees. How can I explain it? Somebody presents very, what's the word, manic, a bit crazy. They're going out of their mind, and then they smile. They do this weird smile that essentially, without giving anything away, passes on the thing.
Oh, you might have mentioned this actually.
To the person that sees that smile.
Yes.
I won't give too much away about the plot of the film, but it's just the smile itself.
Yes.
I don't know how they do it.
You did mention this.
I don't know how they make it so, so creepy, but it's one of those things that will live with you. It's just absolutely horrible. And then you can be talking to someone like, if you think about this film, I'm even doing it now. I'm looking at you, thinking about you suddenly do this smile.
Yeah, no, I'm already, I've got goosebumps because I'm kind of imagining what you're imagining.
It's the most horrible, and I can't explain to you why it's the most scary thing.
It's
so scary to watch.
I don't like it.
And it really, really lives with you. And it's just someone smiling at someone, but it's not.
It's obviously not like just a normal, absolutely.
It's not a normal smile, and it's not them. It's not that person smiling at you.
Yeah.
It is them, but it's not them.
Yeah.
Did
you ever see the internet meme? I think it was called Momo, and I think it was, it might have been a Japanese thing, and it was, so you had the myth of the Slender Man that was sort of made up. Around 2012, 2013. And then I think it was Momo, was this sort of character with a sort of grotesque kind of elongated, almost bird-like face with this grotesque big grin. It's just really creepy and horrible. And that was one of those things where it started to just kind of be injected into areas of the internet. People would just start throwing stuff in. You know, you'd be watching a normal video and then suddenly you'd just see Momo and it would just, it's horrible, you know.
Yeah.
Kind of gives me that vibes.
Yeah,
I can't wait to watch that. And I had forgotten you had described that. That sounds, that sounds great. I'm down.
It's horrendous. It's a horrible watch, but you'll love it. It's really. It's one of those that it literally ticks that box of, if you want to be scared, if you want to sit on your own in a dark room and be absolutely petrified, this is a film that will do that.
I don't do drugs anymore, and so this is what I've got.
Yeah.
This is how I feel things now.
Yeah, and this film will 100% do that. And the fact that it's modern, that it's new, makes it even better because I think, like I said, you don't see films like that nowadays. And this is one of those few. I sat down thinking it's just going to be another one of these horror films. It's entertaining. I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be one of those that I'll never remember it again. Yeah. But I enjoy it tonight. But it's just so much more than that. It was so good.
It shows you that there are still good ideas that can be executed.
Yeah.
Well, mine is not a new idea. Mine is, my number four is from 1999. Yeah, I'll give you some clues. Mine cost $60,000 to make. and it made $248 million at the box office.
This might be my number five. This is my number five.
1999's The Blair Witch Project.
Yeah.
At the it's one of those. I do not think it has. I don't think it holds up. Because I think the acting and all, because we like it invented found footage effectively, not really, but it kind of did.
Yeah.
And so, you know, some of it is a little bit maybe like drama kid, you know, you can see that they're, you know, improvising and playing around and that kind of stuff. But I think the ending, it just, they stick the landing on the ending. I think knowing that there are elements of that, my understanding anyway, is that the cast weren't really necessarily fully clued in on, like they were being messed with a bit, and so what, you know, when you get the ending when they're in that house and there's just the shouting and the running around and you see the hands on the wall, the handprints, the tiny child handprints on the wall, and then, you know, one of the characters being made, I've got goosebumps already, being one of the characters being made to stand in the corner, and you just know something awful is about to happen. And it's just, it was of its time. I think it really was quite the thing, and it was polarizing. I remember, I don't know how it is for you, but it feels like years, like when we were much younger, it feels like films had build-ups for months. Like I feel like Jurassic Park was being built up for a year, if not longer. Like people were just talking about Jurassic Park, and the Blair Witch Project was the same. People were talking about it for like 6 months, and then finally we can see it. And I remember the conversation with Mike, and it's only a 15, we can go and see it, you know, because we weren't old enough to watch an 18. And we're like, you know, there's all this lore around why it was only a 15 and stuff, and it's not, because it's not actually, nothing really happens. But yeah, going to see it, and it was me and two mates, and me and my mate, who were both like drama kid kind of people, loved it. And then my other mate was like, she was a big film buff, and she was so looking forward to it, and she was just like, that sucked. She just thought it was bad. And so I have a lot of sympathy for it. But yeah, how did it land for you?
What you say, that was the first horror film I remember being absolutely massive.
Yeah.
So when I was young, obviously Nightmare on Elm Street was the horror film, and that was from the 80s before I was born. And that was the thing that I watched. It was the one that my brothers introduced me to. But the first time I remember a film coming out of the cinema and being talked about in advance and being talked about for months afterwards was Blair Witch. Mm-hmm. And I remember it being absolutely massive. And it was the first horror film that I fully invested in, mm-hmm. in my lifetime. And I thought, I was too young at the time to go to cinema. Slightly under 15, but again, my brother's got it on a pirate copy, and I remember watching it and just being absolutely, and because it was a pirate copy as well, it was a bit, the quality of it wasn't great.
That's so adding to it.
You couldn't see everything, but you could hear everything, you could see enough. But it was one of those where it kept going a bit dark and a bit light, and it was like that was, which added to it as well. And the I think the end scene in that is one that, when he's facing the wall, is something as simple as it is. And I'm sure if that came out then, I watched it, it probably wouldn't scare me, so I don't know. But
still creeps me out, mate. Yeah. I'm still creeped out by it.
The thought of it, when that scene, it just absolutely lived with you. Like, because I think the story was that the Blair Witch, that the story that they'd said before they went out into the woods, was that the Blair Witch had kidnapped these children, and she would kill two of them and make one of them stand in the corner or something like that, and have their back to them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when she walks down the stairs and he stood there right at the end of the film with his back to her in a dark room, all in black and white at this point, and he just stood there with his back to her in the corner, and you just know something bad's happening, and then it just ends on that. I remember that was something that, obviously at that age as well, I think I must have been about, so I was about 11 in 1999, and it just lived with me for months. And I remember, like you said, I remember it being huge as well. That was my number five.
Mm-hmm. The whole film plays out in your imagination, and there's actually not that many films that really do that. Maybe Paranormal Activity might be one of those. I'm not sure. As I say, it's been a while, but like, when a film actually plays out in your imagination, that's way scarier than anything you can see on screen. The stuff we can imagine is way worse.
Yeah.
So I've stolen your number five. Is there anything that you could put in its place?
So, there's a couple of things that I've been toying around with and didn't quite make the cut. One of them, The Conjuring.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of jump scares in that, and it's sort of, the thing about The Conjuring is I think it's the best of that genre of film. There's a lot of it, like Insidious and that sort of film, where they're not very good.
But I tell you what, I'm with you. I think where they excel is watching them in the cinema. They're communal horror films for me, because when you get the jump scares, everyone goes, and then there's like a little titter of laughter where everybody's embarrassed because they made a noise.
Yeah.
And like that becomes communal. Like I think The Conjuring was the first one where I clocked, this is a thing. Like this is a legit experience, is you go to watch this together and to be all scared together and enjoy that feeling. Like that, as soon as I clocked it, I was like, this is a whole thing in and of itself. Yeah. As a way of enjoying these films.
100% I agree with that. I watched The Conjuring 1 and 2 at the cinema. I agree with that as an experience. It was great. And I think, like I say, a lot of those films in that genre aren't very good. And I think The Conjuring is by far the best of that bunch of films in that. Because I think I just really enjoyed that film. Not even just the fact that the experience of being in the cinema and watching it, but I think it's a storyline. Like, I could watch The Conjuring and The Conjuring 2. Mm-hmm. I think actually one of those things of a sequel was as good as the first.
Yeah.
I think after that, all the spin-offs, not very good.
The Annabelles and Annabelles, the whatever. The Nun.
They're all shocking. But I think The Conjuring 1 and 2. And actually, I think there might have been a Conjuring 3.
But
1 and 2, I think, two great horror films. And number 2 as well, because it's set in England.
Mm-hmm.
It feels a bit more close to home, and it feels a bit...
And it's based on I don't know if the first one was, but yeah, I know the second one was. And like that conceit of these running characters who are these sort of ghost hunters, there's like an almost evangelical kind of feel about the couple. Like they carry through, I think. I like them a lot. I consider those fun horror films.
Yeah.
Rather than ones they don't really creep me out, but they give you all the fun thrills and spills.
They give you the jump scares, the decent jump scares.
Yeah, they are.
The one that I kind of wanted to put in there, but I didn't, is The Witch. So I didn't put in there because it's very similar to sort of your Hereditary, Midsommar, that sort of feel about it.
Yeah.
And the reason I didn't put it in, Hereditary is the one of those where I put in which isn't something that really scared me, but just made me feel a certain way. The Witch is in the same category as that, and I didn't want to put them both in there for that reason.
Yeah.
But The Witch is another very, very good horror film.
Mm-hmm.
One of those things that isn't just like sitting watching a horror, it's actually just a good film.
Yeah.
But it is also one of those that gradually creeps you out and gradually makes you feel worse and worse as you're watching it.
Yes,
and you don't really know why. It's one of those things where nothing really scary happens all the way through. It's just the feel of it the whole way through is just creepy.
So for my number 5, because I remember how I felt when I left the cinema, I'm going to go with Mama. It is the story of a couple of kids whose mum dies, and then they get taken into care. They've lived seemingly out in the wilderness in like a cabin, locked away for a few years, and so they've developed and the assumption is that the eldest has like had to go out and forage for food and stuff, and they're kind of feral. They are feral, and it's this family take them in and stuff. And then what you realise is the mum hasn't left the kids.
Right.
And so the mum talks to the kids and communicates and plays with them, but the mother is this, you know, creepy, shadowy, horrible, black mass of stuff that will, you know, she's trying to do away with the parents because she wants to keep these kids all for herself. And so it's back to that sort of corrupted idea of parenthood and stuff. It is in some ways, I think it's got a better storyline than the kind of fun horror films that we were talking about. But it was one where I left the cinema and my brother, had, I think maybe I might've seen this in 2014, and my brother had his second kid. and I left the cinema and I just wanted to call him to make sure everything was okay. I was so like, oh, it was, yeah. It's worth a go.
Okay.
It's a good film. And it got me, and not in like the, isn't this fun kind of way. It was just like, it kind of did stay with me.
So this is Luke Gallagher, and quite the horror buff. Definitely a genre close to my heart. Although that feels weird because it's not exactly wholesome, is it? I think we made ourselves a cracking list. Apologies for the current timbre of my voice, but I went to the podcast show London this week and last week, and all I got was this lousy virus. I don't think I was the only one. I think there seems to be a lot of it about, as people say at the moment. But it was wonderful to see some people and to potentially rig up some new guests as well. So you'll probably hear those in like mid August if they happen, because we are working very well in advance. And I'm going to tell you just very briefly, I'm having so much fun. I mean, I'm sat here at the moment. Not feeling very well, just feeling kind of miserable. Don't really want to do any work because I want to rest. But I love making the show. Like, I really enjoy it. And I'm at the moment, I'm getting to do just the bits that I enjoy, which means, like, we don't have much of a listenership. If you would like more people to enjoy the show, and you'd like to have some friends that enjoy List Envy too, or if you'd like your friends to enjoy List Envy, then please point them to listenvypod.com, because I'm going to keep doing this. I don't want to have to do all the horrible marketing stuff, because that's the stuff that's like, after a while, it just kind of sucks the fun out of everything. And what is lovely about the luxury of the show is that I get just to do this, and it makes me happy. So listenvypod.com if you'd like to tell your friends. You can leave a rating and a review if you like, but that doesn't help. It's nice, and it tells other people that that you enjoy the show, but there's no algorithm to which it adds a boost. It's a nice thing. But of course, if you do want to support the show in more financial terms, you are more than welcome to do so, and you will have my eternal friendship. listenvypod.com/plus is where you can do that. I am toying with the idea of uploading video. So Luke's episode and Kat's episode from a couple of weeks ago are the only two for which I do not have video, because they were recorded in person. But for everything else in the new 2024 run, I do have video. So I've been wondering about whether I upload unedited versions of the video somewhere and make them available to you as another way of saying thank you for your patronage. Your patronage, by the way, £2 a month. That is the cost. It's not even the cost of a decent coffee if you go outside. So if you'd like to do that, and express your appreciation for the show in small monetary terms, it's like 50p an episode, then listenvypod.com/plus is where you can do that. It's very easy to sign up. It takes you a minute. I don't have your credit card details. I won't be able to do anything nefarious with them. It's weird that I said that, isn't it? I've made it weird now. Had I not said that, it would have been fine. Now you're thinking, why is he protesting? Why is he telling me that my credit card details are going to be fine? Oh no, I've made it weird. I've made a dreadful error. So coming up then next week, we are going to Disney World. And then after that, we're talking Sonic logos, then endangered species, real inventions inspired by sci-fi, and lots more to come. So listenvypod.com is where you can go if you are not already subscribed to the show. If you're not following it in your podcast app of choice, then that is the simplest way for you to find out all the information, all the ways that you can do that. One of them being email. So if you don't want to bother with podcast apps, you'll get an email in your inbox every Tuesday with the new episode. And with that, let us get back to the matter at hand. Then Luke and I have a final list to build of our top five films that gave us the creeps.
We have a task in front of us now, given the films that we've suggested here, I think Paranormal Activity, Nightmare on Elm Street, Hereditary, I feel like those three have definitely got to be in there. And then can we have room for, I think, The Blair Witch, because we both had it, and can I persuade you to A Midsommar?
I think you can persuade me to A Midsommar, mm-hmm. purely because that was in my original list.
Yeah, okay.
And the only reason I took it out was because I didn't think it massively fit the theme.
Yeah.
And I put Hereditary in.
Yeah, yeah. Mind you, we kind of two Ari Asters. I think that feels wasteful.
I think you convinced me that Midsommar should be in there ahead of Hereditary.
Okay.
Essentially.
All right.
I think you've convinced me of that.
All right.
I'm happy to do that as a switch.
I really want to see Smile, and I feel like I don't know if I can put it in having not seen it yet, but you really did give a very good accounting of it. I'm wondering, we might have to knock Nightmare down a bit, I think, because it's so, I don't know if it holds up in the same way. And I think it's true with Blair Witch as well.
Yeah.
I think that I like the idea of The Conjuring maybe being there as number five, because I think
slightly different.
It is. It's a different vibe. And the nice thing about two, maybe how do you feel about putting The Conjuring 2 in there, knowing that we know that that one's based on a real haunting that we know actually happened? Well, we don't know how it actually happened, but...
I know what you mean. I wouldn't be adverse for Conjuring being number two, but I think Blair Witch...
I mean The Conjuring 2.
Of The Conjuring.
But like at number five. Yeah.
Number five. Okay, yeah. So I was going to say, I think
there are definitely better films.
They're better films. Yep. I think I would probably arguably put Conjuring 2, over number one in our list, yeah.
I feel like... Okay, here we go. So from five to one, The Conjuring 2... Midsommar, Nightmare on Elm Street, The Blair Witch Project, Paranormal Activity.
I think that's a good order.
All right, so I will ask you formally then, Luke Gallagher, do you consent to this list?
I consent to that list, yeah.
Well, we've got to talk about honourable mentions, things that didn't make it. We didn't, so I was going to pick this as my number five, but I didn't in the end. And I want to talk to you about Barbarian.
Barbarian, yes, very good film.
I watched this last night. Right. I loved, and it did creep me out. But also, like, it's a smart film. It knows how to play with tropes.
Yeah.
You've got the wonderful, you know, the African American girl. You know, don't go in there. And she's like, she looks down the barrel of this dark corridor, and she's like, nope. Perfect, you know, like, it knows what it is.
Yeah, I actually completely forgot about that film. That could have easily made a list. I think the beginning as well, it makes you think it's a completely different film to what it turns out to be. And the beginning's brilliant in itself. Like when she arrives at that Airbnb and it feels realistic, mm-hmm. and the guy in there feels very, very creepy, and you think you know where this is going,
yep.
or you think you know what this film is about, and then it takes a massive about turn, and it also sort of plays with that. You just assumed this thing about this guy in there. And I don't want to give anything away, but it's not what you think it is.
Yeah.
And the fact you just automatically go there at the beginning and think this is what this is about and this is what's happening here.
It has a few really good head turns in that. Like, what? Yeah. Okay. This is what's happening now.
Yeah. Honourable mention, one actually that I forgot, which I've just remembered, which is actually probably the greatest horror film ever made.
Wow.
Didn't make my list because it didn't creep me out, but it's an incredible film. It Follows.
Yeah, now.
Really, really good film.
Now, you see, Luke, you see, we talked earlier about films like being taken out of the action.
Yeah.
And It Follows was all of that for me, because it was in, and I know it was an artistic choice, and it was fair enough. It was on purpose, but it didn't work for me. The whole, you can't pin it to a particular time, a particular moment in time, because all the, like, you've got bits of technology that existed in certain eras, and you've got, like, a lot of the home interior is sort of brown and the TVs are really kind of 70s, 80s, but there's other aspects that are from modern. And so for me, because it existed in this not real time, I couldn't, like, I need to be invested in it being a real thing. I need to believe the world. Yeah. And because it was in this like out of time thing.
Right. Okay. See what you mean?
It was, I need it to be grounded, but I think the concept is great.
I think the concept's unbelievable. Sexually transmitted ghost that just follows you so slowly.
Yeah.
That you can look at we could look out the window now and see it coming towards us, and we'd have half an hour to we could finish this podcast, have some dinner, like go out for a drink, and it'd still be there walking towards the flat. But you know, like it's constantly coming for you. So you can't really sleep because it will get there, it will get to you eventually. And even the idea that you can't really pass it on you can, but then once you pass it on, it will just kill them and come back to you. You never know that it's fully passed on.
Yeah. This has been a creepy pleasure. I don't like that I said that, because that sounded like your company was creepy, and that's absolutely not the case. Your company's been delightful, and I've enjoyed talking about creepy things. I'm going to do my best not to have nightmares, but to help stave off those nightmares, what are you up to that people can enjoy? Where can we see you are starting to tour the country with your stand-up?
Yeah, I'm touring the country. I'm all over. You can come and see me on my
like a rash
UK-wide
on your tour,
my worldwide tour. I've got a few stand-up.
You got some dates coming up.
Stoke, Leeds, Manchester. Literally going all over the country doing this stand-up malarkey. So yeah, I'll be doing that for the next few months, and then we'll see how that goes, and then we might do it for another few months. I'm just going to keep taking it.
So when you at a local comedy venue near you, either look for an open mic slot, because Luke is probably there, or look for the name Luke Gallagher, and let the comedy take you.
Or look for a really rundown pub that looks like it's boarded up, but no one goes in there. The type of pub you think you might not come out of it alive. Uh-huh. And there's a good chance I'll be in there doing some open mic comedy.
Doing some stuff about chicken.
Yeah, exactly.
Luke, this has been a real pleasure. Thank you very much for joining me on List Envy.
Cheers, Mark. Thanks so much.